From the shadows of the radio towers, this is the Gay PHX Podcast. Your community radio on demand.
It's gonna be a good day. And everything is going to go my way. It's gonna be a good day. The sun is shining bright and it's here to stay.
This week on Gay PHX, can you still feel it in the air? The energy, the leather, the moments that didn't just happen, they landed. Mr. Anvil Phoenix Weekend came in hot, and let's be real, Phoenix showed up exactly as they hoped they would. From the early events to the final moments of the title contest, this wasn't just a competition, this was community in full force. You saw people stepping into themselves, owning their space, and reminding us what visibility, confidence, and chosen family actually look like when it's real. And whether you were there in person, watching the live stream, or hearing it through group chats the next morning, you felt it. That kind of weekend doesn't just stay contained, it ripples. And that's what we're building here. Not just coverage, connection. Because this platform, Gay PHX, only works when people show up, share it, and keep it moving forward. And after a weekend like that, yeah, the momentum is real. Today, we shift gears and sit down with Daniel and Brittany from Lewis Labadee Law, one of the founding 50. And this conversation hits in a way that a lot of people don't expect. Because let's be honest, most people don't think about legal protection until something goes wrong. And what they break down is simple, but powerful. Protecting your partner, your family, your future. That doesn't just happen by accident, it happens by intention. We talk about estate planning, adoption, name changes, and the very real gaps that still exist depending on where you live and how you build your own family. And what laws decide to recognize, it's not fear-based, it's clarity-based, and that matters. So if you ever thought, I should probably handle that someday, this is the conversation that moves that thought into action. So yeah, we're still riding high from the weekend, still seeing the photos and going through them, still hearing the stories, still feeling that we showed up for each other energy. That's not something you wait for. That's something that you keep building. So let's get into it. Brian, what's going on this week?
You're listening to Gay PHX, where community comes first.
Hey, 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 Phoenix, go ahead and check that group chat because I promise you it's already started. So what are we doing this weekend? And if your answer was, I don't know yet, oh baby, we are not doing that this week. Because this lineup, this is one of those perfectly chaotic, glitter-loaded, outfit-planning-required kind of weekends. We're talking a dance floor that actually means something, a Sunday market where your wallet's about to get emotionally involved, and a drag brunch that will absolutely ruin your ability to behave before noon. There will be eye contact. There will be bad decisions. There will be at least one moment where you pause, look around, and think, yep, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. This is Brian's Hot 3, your Desert Den Daddy approved guide to getting out, getting seen, and maybe getting into a little bit of trouble. Let's go. Hot pick number one is Euphoria at Stacy's on Melrose, Thursday, April 16th at 9 p.m. This isn't just a party, it's a take the room and owned it kind of night. Euphoria is led by trans artists, creators, and leaders who are bringing visibility, talent, and straight up power to the stage. And when that kind of energy hits the dance floor, baby, it spreads. You're walking into a space that celebrates identity out loud, where the performance hit deep, the music feels louder, and the crowd shows up ready to be part of something bigger than just a night out. And let's be real, confidence like that, it's magnetic. Hot pick number two, Melrose Vintage Market at Melrose District, Sunday, April 19th from 10 to 3. Sunday morning, but make it dangerous for your bank account and your self-control. This market is that perfect mix of vintage finds, local artists, and oh, I'm just browsing turns into, why am I holding three bags and a plant? It's sunshine, community, and just enough chaos to make it fun. It's free, it's dog-friendly, and it's one of those spots where you wander in casually and somehow end up staying way longer than planned. Also, let's not ignore the real headline. You will run into someone, and you will care about what you're wearing when you do. Hot pick number three, Flamboyant, Drag Brunch, and Royal Kitchen plus Cocktails. Sunday, April 19th, doors open at 10 a.m., show is at 11. Let's go ahead and throw a quiet brunch out the window. Hosted by Barbara Seville, this is where mimosas meet mayhem, and nobody's leaving without at least one moment of full-volume cheering. You've got powerhouse performances, hilarity commentary, and a room full of people fully committed to the bit before noon. Add in a full brunch menu and drinks that hit just right, and suddenly your I'll take it easy today plan? Gone. This is not background entertainment. This is the main event with eggs. 18 plus and older, please. Stay hydrated, stay dangerous, and you're going to make a bad decision, at least make it a memorable one. Phoenix, this isn't just another week on the calendar. This is one of those moments where the city feels a little louder, a little warmer, a little more alive. Where strangers turn into conversations, conversations turn into connections, and connections, boy, you already know where that can go. There's music pulling you in, there's spaces being created for you. There's a version of the weekend that is a whole lot better than sitting at home scrolling past everyone else living it. So be in it, be seen, be bold, be the reason someone texts their friend, okay, wait, who is that? And if the night gets a little messy, perfect, that means you did it right. From the shadows of the radio towers, I'm your Desert Den Daddy Brian, reminding you that life is too short for maybe next time. Show up, stay out, and give them something to remember. Until next time, that's what's hot.
Want all the details? Head over to GabePHX.com, your one-stop shop for queer events, promos, and everything happening in the Valley.
This is what community sounds like.
This is Amanda Renfrew, enrolled agent with The Tax Person with your tax year countdown. Business payments through Venmo, Cash App, or PayPal may be reported on Form 1099-K. Separate your business and personal transactions now to avoid a very messy tax season. Get support with a free 15-minute consult at thetaxperson.com or look for me as The Tax Person on socials.
More stories, more voices, more pride. You're tuned in to the Gay PHX Podcast.
Today on Gay PHX, you're getting a real look at what happens when legal expertise meets real community care. Because let's face it, most people don't think about a lawyer until they need a lawyer. And when that moment hits, who you have in that corner really matters. Today we're talking about what it means to show up for people, not just in the courtroom, but in the community, and why having trusted local advocacy makes all the difference. Please welcome to the Rainbow Tinted Microphone, Daniel and Brittany.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so very much for taking time out of your day to sit with us today.
Thank you for having us.
And for listeners listening for the very first time, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Brittany Labadee. I am one of the attorneys at Lewis Labadee, and I focus in adoption as well as assisted reproduction technology.
And I'm Daniel Lewis. I'm also one of the partners at Lewis Labadee. I do a variety of things, but most of my work is contract or contract adjacent. So I do a lot of business. I do a lot of estate planning, and I also do prenups, which are a type of contract, and have done a fair number of name changes over the years. We're talking about community items.
Let's start with the estate planning. Why is this something people shouldn't put off?
You shouldn't put off estate planning because you never know what's going to happen. Estate planning is not only planning for the eventuality of your passing, but also the possibility of incapacity. Incapacity is any time you're legally or medically unable to make your own decisions. You need to plan for that as well. Hopefully that never happens to any of us. But
as someone who's suffered two heart attacks and also been in the hospital for catching a virus randomly, you never know.
Exactly. And incapacity, during that time, you'll need someone to make decisions for you. So that's part of our standard package. Powers of attorney is the document for that.
Now, you mentioned prenups as well. What goes into putting that together? I'm sure that's a very sensitive subject for people.
I do a lot of our prenups. Brittany also does them. A prenup is essentially a decision you make to move along in your marriage as if you were dating. So instead of accumulating property jointly, you continue to accumulate property on your own. I did my first same-sex marriage prenup maybe two and a half years ago, and the floodgates really opened after that. So we had to go through and change all of our templates to be same gender. There's a lot of he, she in the standard this gender template, but we've moved towards trying to make it more gender neutral and where necessary, he or she. But yeah, the prenup is just basically usually for people who already have assets and want to protect them in case of eventual divorce.
Or I can add that I also tell my clients that doing a prenup is going forward with intention. So in Arizona, at least, community property is by default. But with a premarital agreement, it's done with intention. So if you go through your joint bank account or joint deeds, you can create community property, but you have those discussions in advance.
So instead of it defaulting to community property, things are separated, and then you can select what goes into the community, so to speak?
Exactly.
Got it.
That's exactly correct. You only create community property by intent under most prenups.
That's interesting. Now, how do you help clients navigate these conversations that can feel very heavy or uncomfortable?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that I just talk with my clients about is the fact that so many people enter into marriages without having financial discussions. And so often we create the draft for them, and then they're able to go through it together. And this opens up conversations for them as far as how they want to structure their lives. It also has a section on disclosures, which is a list of all of their assets and debts and things. And so each party is getting a clear view of what the party has coming into the marriage.
Right. And also, those financial disclosures are required by law. So that's the starting point. I always call it the homework that you have to do for your prenup. So I always start there. You get the disclosures together. And just like Brittany was saying, I always encourage open, honest, transparent conversation about it. It's an agreement between those two people, the soon-to-be married couple, not an agreement between the lawyers. It's about you guys figuring out the terms, not us. Our job is to put your wishes into contract language at that point.
That makes sense. You're the facilitators for what they want to make happen in a legal form.
Exactly.
Now, you had mentioned that adoption. Now, that's huge in an emotional journey. How do you support families through that process for an LGBTQ couple?
I think for any couple, I have a pretty unique background. My parents are kind of saints, and they had 44 foster children.
Wow.
They started fostering. Yeah, they started fostering when I moved out or was mostly an adult. But still, I have 44 foster siblings. So I have dealt with loss. I've seen success. And now those children are adults, and some of them are coming back around, and it's really unique. As well as my sister, who actually works for the firm too. She was a child in foster care, and now she's an adult. And so I think personally, I can really relate to my clients. And then as far as dealing with parties in my community, it's so important to understand the laws, because everyone is treated so differently. A heterosexual couple has one set of laws. My lesbian couples have one set of laws, and my male couples, my gays, they also have a completely separate set of rules. And yeah, it's always really interesting. And some of that is even dealing with natural born children. I can give you a good example. So this comes into play with second parent adoptions, which is what I call my same sex couple adoptions. Let's say that you've got a lesbian couple, and they decide to use IVF. They get a donor for the sperm, and then one of them carries, right? The child that's born to them, according to the laws here, is that of the mother within the marriage. If they're both the mother, they are determined to both be the legal parent, but then there's a ton of gray area here. Sometimes, because they might use IVF, one might carry the other person's egg. And so it creates this complex system where is genetics controlling, is birth controlling? And so we recommend a second parent adoption. And then similarly, on the other end, with my gay couples, they don't have that option. And if they're not genetically related, and only one of them can be genetically related, then we again need to do a second parent adoption to ensure that they're protected.
So I guess I didn't think of that. So in the lesbian couple, if parent A eggs go in parent B, and then that's where they're born, then where does that become?
Yeah. Reciprocal IVF is what we call it.
Wow.
It's mind-blowing.
There have to be legal paths written for each of these specific cases, correct? They can't write a law, can't be generic. It has to be specific. That's part of the how it works, correct?
Yeah, but we don't have those laws right now. Some of the states have them, and then a lot of our laws are just not quite there.
And is that a state thing? Is that a federal thing? Is it a combination of both?
Yeah, it's definitely state by state. And then it also varies by country, because for a lot of my gay couples, they're using surrogates, right? How else can they carry?
Right.
And many of the times, they're going out of the country and doing international surrogacies. And then we have the complexity of international laws, too.
Wow. So what does the process actually look like when someone comes to you for adoption support?
So it really depends on how complex the situation is. All of our cases, we start with a phone consultation and go from there. If all of the parties are in agreement and we're not needing to terminate any rights or anything like that, then usually it goes through like a manner of an uncontested adoption. Everyone signs consent and there's a petition, some additional paperwork. The adopting parent or parents need to have their fingerprint clearance cards. And then there's one adoption hearing. It is relatively painless, although it's frustrating that legal parents need to adopt their own children. But I'd rather people are protected than not.
What Brittany was talking about, the termination, that's the opposite of adoption. So adoption is establishing legal parentage over a child. And that can be done with adults as well, up until a certain age usually. But the termination, which is also called a severance, is removing the legal parent relationship with the child. And that happens in cases of abuse or neglect, or just someone wants to relinquish their rights to adopt. That's what she's talking about there.
Got it. Thanks for that clarity. Sorry. So for someone who's thinking of starting a family, when's the right time to start talking to a lawyer?
Early and often. So I make myself available as early as somebody is starting to. I usually suggest before you're getting into any sort of arrangements with egg donors, embryo donors, any sort of surrogates, that you talk to counsel and you make sure that you understand whatever laws are going to apply. Because there's often between states or international laws that are going to apply. And then we do the initial consultation so the parties are going into it clear. And then I just make myself available until they actually need me. So they can always email. You don't necessarily have to be my active client. If you have questions and things come up during the journey, I'm there.
That's very cool. Now, you had also mentioned name change process. What does that process look like?
It can be fairly easy. The optimal and easiest situation is someone who is unmarried and has no minor children. And it can get very complicated if you are married and have kids and you want to change your name or you want to change the kid's name. The reason being is, I think in the past, the courts have had experience where people use name changes for fraudulent reasons or to avoid child support. So now the courts are fairly strict and you have to inform someone you're married to. If a child is of a certain age, that child has to consent to the name change. And if that child has a legal parent, even if you're not married to them, you have to get permission from your name, change the child's name, excuse me. And if that person is estranged and hard to locate, we have to try to find them and have to try to serve them with notice that the name change is occurring. So it can get complicated, but it's actually for, like I said, just a single person, no kids, not married. It's a fairly easy process. The court usually these days requires documents. Since 9/11 and how the world has developed, the court is much more stringent. They want a copy of your ID, so they match up your ID with whoever appears in court. A lot of these are by video conference, but not all of them. Then they also want your birth certificate. And if you were adopted, they'll probably want to see your adoption decree. If you're recently divorced or you had several name changes, several divorces, several marriages, they're going to want to see all of your divorce decrees because they want that kind of chain of title. Think about the chain of evidence. If you like those show, forensic shows, each little change they want to document from your birth until your current name.
So they keep tracking
it for you as long as. Exactly. They want it all tracked. But the hearing is fairly simple. Usually the judge just asks you a few questions. If you have a criminal history, it can be a little more complicated. That's usually not a huge barrier to changing your name. And you really don't have to have a good reason to change your name, just a reason. I have done in the past a lot of name changes for trans people. Usually in the past, they didn't really care, but as the political winds have changed lately, most of my trans clients just want a very simple statement about why they're changing their name. Not, I'm changing my name because I'm trans. They usually want something more like, I'm changing my name because to conform to my current identity or something to that effect. Something neutral, more generic. Yes. So it's not tracked in there. And also, along with the name change for a trans person, usually they might be looking at gender markers. That is not a court process. That is usually done through administrative stuff, like with Social Security, driver's license, and birth certificate.
Because that was going to lead into my next questions. For gender change, that's not a legal thing that they have to do? That is administrative that they have to go through to try and make happen?
Exactly. I saw a blog post that I wrote on it. I didn't review it right before this interview, but essentially there's certain steps that have to be taken in order to affect a gender marker change. Some of my trans clients have been able to do it through their driver's license without any trouble whatsoever, but still on their birth certificate or Social Security, it shows their former gender, for lack of a better phrase. So in order to do the birth certificate, it used to be that you had to take some sort of affirmative surgical step. But I think there have been quite a few cases that have come up recently, and I'm not sure if you need that anymore. I haven't done research on it in a while. I think there were a bunch of children in Tucson that made this lawsuit in federal court, and I think they might have declared it unconstitutional in that court, but I'm guessing it's up on appeal still, maybe. I'm not sure. But
it's one of those that's ebbs and flows because of our political climate right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And people have to be aware that we've got a Democratic administration in the governor's office in Arizona, but we've got a Republican conservative administration in the White House. So like Social Security can be difficult. They might not allow that gender change at all, whether it's constitutional or not, and constitutionally allowed and mandated. But
I wanted to chime in on two things. Do you mind if I jump in?
Absolutely.
So one of the things that I want to note is this is Arizona specific, right? So sometimes different states deal with these types of procedures differently. I've had to use a name change proceeding in order to get a court order for another state to do a gender marker change. And in addition to that, I think it's important before our clients are going through this, even if it is administrative, meaning that they don't need necessarily legal representation or court order it's good to get legal advice on it because there can be some additional complications, whether it's between states or if you have somebody who travels with a lot, it, certain places internationally, you can run into really significant problems. And so the advice may be, I understand that you want this, but at this time, it may not be great because you may run into such issues internationally. And so if we can always do consultations on any of these things so that the parties are going into these changes that probably that are much harder to change back, right?
Right.
Prior to taking those steps.
So trust is everything in legal work, especially this kind of things that we're talking about here. So how do you create a space where clients can feel safe with all these personal details?
One, I think our reviews don't lie. We've been in business for going on 12 years now. We have all 5-star reviews. We are in the community. We are an ally. We are family owned for the most part. And so I think that we just create a safe space through so many ways. There's anybody in our community is not going to reach out and feel judged in any way. They're not going to, we have gender neutral forms. We have resources. We really treat everyone the same regardless of sexual orientation or a need. We just want to protect everyone.
So for me, I think that probably the number one complaint or impression I've heard from my LGBTQ community clients is they don't want an attorney or probably any other professional who's going to judge them by their lifestyle and is going to put in the work to help them understand how might this be different for me as alternative gender or sexual orientation, different sexual orientation, or how is it exactly the same? And they don't want to feel, like Brittany said, judged by someone. And like I said, I think that goes the same, not just for people in the community, but anyone with immutable characteristics, whether it be persons of color, disabled persons, any of those immutable characteristics. I think people don't want professionals who don't judge them. So that's how I try to make people feel welcome and safe, letting them know, hey, I've encountered this before. And even if I don't know the answer to something, we're going to try to get the answers that you need.
And what would you say to someone who feels intimidated or even scared to reach out to a lawyer?
I think that one of the, even if somebody is afraid or worried, it's always better to be preventative and proactive in your life than have to get a lawyer on the worst day of your life. And I think that's why we run a different firm than many. We don't do any litigation here, very little. We really try and save our clients time and money and focus on getting them results instead of complicating things. And so if we can help somebody prevent an issue by creating a contract, or something that Dan does is he handles these hospital visitation authorization forms, which makes it clear on who can visit you and who can't in the time that you're hospitalized. And I think that just pick up the phone or give us an email and you'll see that it's not that scary. We're going to listen. We're going to take the time and we'll answer questions.
Exactly. I think a lot of the commercials you might see, the guys act like they're aggressive, pitbull attorneys. And
oh,
honestly, we're not like that.
The alpha male lawyer people. Commercials have got to stop. They just seriously do. If I see one more flexing lawyer on a billboard, I'm going to puke.
There's actually some things that they're investigating about these attorneys that do too much marketing. We don't do much marketing. We actually just do so much word of mouth, but that do so much marketing and they're on these billboards, but then they're just the face. They're not actually in court and they're not even actually acting attorneys, even if they've got a bar license. And so there's some they're getting some heat for it, and potentially some of those things might change.
Well, that would be great, because there's this one, it looks like, I can't even pronounce it, so I'm not even going to give them any airtime, but it's just, for like months, it was just a headshot, and then whatever law. And like now they've started like adding things because I think they realize that no one understands and it looks like a Purview commercial kind of thing. It's just so bizarre. Now, with the advent of AI, what are some common mistakes people are making when they try and DIY their own legal documents?
I think you've seen some of that on the news where the AI will hallucinate. AI is a great tool to force multiplier for sure if you're a professional. Especially if you need help drafting something complicated, it could give you some ideas. But every attorney is required to supervise the work done for them. So even if you've created something with AI, you drafted a term here or there, you've got to read it and make sure it says what you need it to say. And the issue I see is I've seen a couple of people send me stuff, which is very obviously AI, that they're trying to do themselves, is there is no one supervising that. And the AIs, they make assumption. They make assumptions. They hallucinate sometimes. And a lot of times they fill gaps in those assumptions with stuff that may or may not be true. So you have to be very careful about that. And I've just seen some stuff that looks on its face somewhat right. It's not completely right. It might not be tailored to the exact facts because people tend to leave facts out when they're using AI, even when they're talking to their lawyers. I always tell people, when you are using a lawyer, you've got to give them all the data. We use our brains like computers, because just like with data you're putting into a computer program, if you give it bad data, you get bad results. That's what the programmers call garbage in, garbage out. It's the same with using my attorney brain. If I don't have all the facts, if you're hiding something from me or you neglect to tell me something, there might be some nuances that I'm going to miss because of that. So that's the type of thing you're seeing with AI. At least I am. I don't know, Brittany?
I would say it's like either too much or too little. So like too much, they take these extremely lengthy contracts that are hard to understand, overly complicating things. They are trying to use legal terminology, which us attorneys are actually trying to get away from. And we try and write more in plain language than using legal terms. And it gets really confusing. Or too little. And they miss major things. Like I saw one where they took out the venue and jurisdiction for a contract, meaning if the parties disagree where the litigation would actually take place. And so those kinds of things are really important, having dispute resolution parts in your contract and things that we see on a daily basis and we recognize are not there, that AI is just not going to. It's just not there yet.
And you're held accountable. Where AI is not held accountable. And if it makes a mistake, when you go in court.
Exactly. So yeah, if you did something up with AI and it's wrong, guess what? The court cannot give you legal advice and neither can the court staff. So you're going to end up maybe with your matter being delayed and having to find an attorney to help you anyway. So you might as well start there. AI is a great place to start to get an idea of where you are, what microcosm you're in as far as the law or anything is concerned, but it's not polished and it doesn't understand when people are leaving stuff out.
It's not reliable legal advice. That is, I think, what people really need to understand, is it's not reliable.
It's not certified. It's not held accountable. Like I said, not held accountable. It hasn't been educated and have these degrees, et cetera, all on the walls, et cetera, showing that they've learned these things. It just has awareness. And I can say that because as a programmer, and I do vibe programming, and I can't leave it on its own. It gets crazy.
Right.
It has the same routine three times in there. And I'm like, wait, why do you have this in there three times? I was like, oh, because it rewrote it three times. But instead of removing it or making it better, it just added it each time. It things like that, I'm assuming, is what also happens in legal documents.
like I said, yeah, we have a duty to supervise. So if we have associate attorneys or a legal assistant working underneath us, we have to supervise that work. It would be the same with like AI, but AI have no supervisor. If you are doing it, we call it pro per, on your own, and you should just get what you get. And you, just like you were talking about with vibe coding, like you have to supervise that work. You've got to actually read the code and make sure it works and understand why it might not work.
Right.
Well, and I think it's not just the legal documents. People are turning to it for legal advice. And it's making our job more difficult when somebody, I went to Gemini and Gemini told me I should do this. And then they just follow the advice of Gemini instead of following the 4-step process that you've given them. And then they're like, why is this complicated? And it's because you made it complicated. I didn't tell you to put anything through Gemini or go and take these other steps. Just follow the direction. We don't. So I think that is what I see or am seeing more and more, is they're relying on the legal advice of AI versus their actual attorney.
What's one thing that you wished every LGBTQ+ person knew about protecting themselves and their family legally, especially considering our political climate right now?
Well, I would say it's twofold. I would say if you have children and there's any sort of question as far as genetics, adoptions, parentage, get a second parent adoption. And then I think the second part is regarding estate planning, making sure that your estate plans are in place. Even just a simple will can do so much to protect you everywhere. When these things cross state lines, so if you have an order here in Arizona, it has to be respected in another state that might be more problematic.
Yes. And in my opinion, I would say get your estate planning together. I do a ton of that. Like I said, it's contract adjacent. With gay marriage being legal, you have that legal relationship together. If it goes away suddenly, which
I could
honestly anticipate.
But it could.
It could. I don't anticipate that happening, but it could, depending on the climate. Then you no longer have that legal relationship together. But the way you can arrange it then is to protect your partner or spouse or former spouse, if the gay marriage does go away, is to do that through your estate planning with a trust and or a will. And like Brittany was talking about with the hospital visitation authorization, that's why a lot of my same-sex couples get them, married and unmarried. And it's also been popular amongst single, cisgender, hetero people, or even unmarried traditional couples. The hospital visitation authorization says, like Brittany said, who can visit you in the hospital. It can also have a list of people who are barred, prohibited from visiting you in the hospital. And you can also grant your power of attorney agent, that's what the person is called who makes decisions for you. It can allow your agent to both let people in to visit you and prohibit people from visiting you, which in the community, that can be a very serious issue. And what it does is it helps establish that relationship through the power of attorney if the actual legal relationship disappears, or if you're in another country, is not even honored. Some countries don't have and don't recognize same-sex marriage. That's one of the things I've come up with in the last couple of years after a lot of my LGBTQ clients have asked me for one. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. So I rolled my sleeves up and got that together. And yeah, become a very popular item in estate planning, something we add into our medical power of attorney package.
Can you share a moment where your work Can you share a moment where your work really made a difference in someone's life?
I sure can. I'll take the lead on this one. So I'd say it was probably about a year ago, maybe a little bit less, I started getting a lot of pushback from both Maricopa County Courts as well as Pinal County Courts for my second parent adoption. And simultaneously, the courts in both counties stopped all of my second parent adoptions. They vacated my hearings. This is not just in for me, but attorneys all over the county. And they essentially said that they are ceremonial and they are not going to go forward with it. And although in many views, yes, I don't believe that they should have to adopt their legal children, our laws just don't protect them yet. And so I ended up joining up with a team of other attorneys. I wrote a very extensive brief and filed it in three of my cases across the two counties. And after review, they ended up reinstating all of my cases as well as resetting other attorneys' cases. And so the impact was not just for my clients, but for so many of my same-sex clients needing to do second parent adoptions where we're able to protect them. So it was really big. I was ready for an appeal. I was really ready. And thankfully we didn't have to get to that point, but it's coming. There's the pushback was there. And so I'm glad that I was able to provide my clients with that protection.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was a super interesting issue that Brittany encountered. I was behind the scenes helping her prepare for the appeal, but Brittany put together a fantastic brief on that, which actually used examples from other states why they support these second parent adoptions in these types of cases to make sure that those legal rights are secured as a parent, as a legal parent, the child.
To someone who's listening and thinking, I should probably do this, what's the first step?
Call or email. Our website has a contact us link. You can also just give us a call and we'll return the call if for some reason we don't answer it. And then the next step from there is we always do an intake form and gather some information to make sure that we can help our prospective new clients. So it just starts with a phone call.
Yeah, the client intake form is essentially contact information for the people involved. That's something we really need. It's a lot like when you go to the doctor, they have you fill out your past medical history and contact information and your emergency contact, that type of thing. But we also are required by our attorney ethical regulations to check for conflicts. And so maybe we have represented the other party or even had a consultation with the other person. We can't take that case. It's very important that we get some information about a person and their case right up front. So that's why we do that intake form. So that's essentially the first step, is filling that out, letting us know what the matter is and who's involved.
And before we wrap, where can people learn more and reach out if they need the help? What's that website?
Yeah, it's lewislabadie.com. It's LewisLabadie. And that's bad in the middle.
Yes, Lewis with a W, Labadie, LABADIE.com. And you can also reach us at our office at 480-598-8724. And that's 480-598-8724.
Perfect. And finally, what made you want to be a part of Gay PHX's Founding 50 and support this community in this way?
For me, I have heard so many times the appreciation from my LGBTQ clients and trans clients, how happy they are to find someone who is an ally of the community and is willing to roll up their sleeves and help them with the matters that might be a little unique to them. And so when I heard about your radio station, Billy, I thought this is something that we should try to stoke that fire, because we are interested in and wanting to help that community, to service them with, again, some unique needs.
And I think for me, as a member of the community, I think it's always important to reach out and be there and be active. And I just, on a daily basis, see how our laws are absolutely affecting everyone. And I think that getting the voice and getting out there and making sure that they know that they have resources and they're not going to be judged and they're welcome with open arms here, it's important.
Awesome. We can't thank you enough. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for taking the time out of your day. I know you're really busy. I really appreciate you doing this today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us. We really appreciate it and are excited.
Pride lives here.
I'm Daddy Dave, your friend in the fight to end stigma. And I'm the founder of Team Friendly, here today to talk about pleasure and sexual health. Sexual health prevention is an important aspect of healthcare. It's more than just about assessing your risks and minimizing those risks. Good health care is also about recognizing the pleasure you want to get out of your sex life. It's about feeling informed, empowered, and good in your own skin. Pleasure and safety can exist together when we have honest conversations, access to judgment-free healthcare, and respect for ourselves and each other. Choosing a friendly approach to sexual health is important. Find a healthcare clinic where these conversations just flow freely. Ask questions, know your options, desires, and limits, and communicate them openly. Let's live our lives fully with less fear and goals to improve our health.
Another reason we love this community.
Huge thank you to our guests this week, Daniel and Brittany from Lewis Labadie Law, for showing up, for doing the work, and for reminding us all that protecting your life, your partner, and your future isn't something that you wait on, it's something you take ownership of. And to you, yes, you listening right now, thank you. Because this weekend proved something. When this community shows up, it's powerful. And Mr. Anvil Phoenix wasn't just a title contest. It was visibility, confidence, connection, all in one area. And that energy, that doesn't just end when the lights go down. It's something you carry forward. And that's exactly how this grows. One share, one conversation, one moment where you tell someone, hey, you should check this out. So if something in this episode hit you, don't keep it to yourself. Send it, share it, talk about it. And if you've got something going on, an event, a story, a business, this is your platform. Head to gayphx.com, submit your event for free, or book time to come on and tell your story. And don't forget, you can listen to the soundtrack of our city 24/7 by going to TuneIn, Radio Garden, or radio.net. And if you're an artist and you want into the mix, submit your music at music.gayphx.com. We're building this all together, and your voice belongs here. We'll see you next week. If you see us out and about, come grab a selfie with us. We love you, Phoenix.
We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side. We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere.
Thanks for hanging out with the Gay PHX Podcast.
Be kind.
Be bold.
Be you.